From Cap Radio in Sacramento, this is Insight. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. As we close 2022, we're taking a listen back to some of the most powerful conversations this year. Out of the hundreds of topics that we've covered, the most meaningful are often those who are vulnerable and share their life experiences to open the minds of others. That brings me to Project Rebound, a solution across Cal State campuses offering education as a gateway to avoid reincarceration, which can have far-reaching ripple effects from job opportunities to housing. Project Rebound began at San Francisco State University by a former inmate who became a college professor, John Irwin. The program has now expanded to over 14 Cal State campuses, including Sacramento State. Back in September, I spoke with Aaron Green, a former student turned director of Project Rebound at Sac State, as well as current student Desiree McFarland, about how the program is helping those formerly incarcerated achieve higher education goals and avoiding reoffending. Well, Aaron, I want to start with you. Talk to us about how you became involved in Project Rebound.
I became involved with Project Rebound while I was incarcerated in 2012. I went to prison for, you know, some really, really poor choices that I had made. And I got introduced to the program and I found out that there was a space that we can actually change things up. The guy that came in was a drug and alcohol counselor. He was bringing in the program, SAP, and he was talking about how he went after prison to get his education as a drug and alcohol counselor. And I was like, okay, and you've been to prison? And he said, yes. He had a G number. And he would always remind us that he had been to prison, he got out of prison, got an education, and was able to come back in, and he was making a good living. And he told us about Project Rebound at San Francisco State University and how he had went there and got his degree, and, you know, he was making really good strides. So he told us just to sign up if we wanted to go into education. And he gave us a flyer with the information for Project Rebound, and I took it to heart. And on that day, I decided that my life would be different. I was going to go get an education. I wasn't going to be told that I couldn't do it. I got my GED while I was in prison. After I got my GED, I became the college clerk. I had scored really high. I almost got a perfect 4,000 on the GED test. And I became the college clerk and started reading all of the books, advising students on what classes to take inside of the, you know, written correspondence courses, and just had that fire inside of me that I really wanted to do something different. Got one of the highest paying jobs on campus, or on the prison yard. I call it campus because it was inside of the school. 33 cents an hour was a huge sum. Most people earned 8 cents. So I knew that I was already working towards something because I was doing something with education. And that's how I got introduced to Project Rebound.
That exchange that you had with that individual was so pivotal in really opening up really the horizon of possibilities that you viewed for yourself.
Yes, it was a game changer, because prior to that interaction and that conversation, I thought I was always going to either be a drug dealer or, you know, a petty thief that would go out and take stuff from stores. And I didn't know anything other. I didn't go to school. I didn't graduate from sixth grade. I left sixth grade in the middle of sixth grade and did not go back to school after that. So education wasn't something that was pushed upon me as a child. I didn't have parents there to tell me you got to go to school. And the county didn't care. You know, it was just stick them in detention, just stick them in detention, just stick them in detention. Instead of saying, okay, how do we fix the problem? It was all about just let them go, do whatever they want to do, forget them.
You also said that, you know, there was this fire inside of you that really was lit and ignited when you had that conversation and devoted your life to education and now helping others. Where did that fire come from if you didn't have that framework as a child for education?
My kids. So I have a son and a daughter, and I wanted to be different for them. I wanted to be able to give them a different life. And I constantly thought about how I didn't have somebody. How could I push education on my kids to make my kids want to be something different so that they weren't going back into prisons and they weren't getting in trouble? So that's where that fire really lit up. It was like, I want my kid to say, that's my dad and I'm proud. Another piece of it was probably the conversation that my father had with me in a letter in 2007 when I was in prison. The letter stated, it's time for you to grow up. By the time you receive this letter, I will be dead. Become a man. So that thought process and how I had continuously let him down over and over and over again by making these horrible choices, how could I ever make him proud?
And now you're the director of Project Rebound at Sacramento State, coming full circle. How do you describe Project Rebound to people who aren't familiar with it?
It's a transformational program. It helps a person transcend all of the negative consequences of life and achieve a new goal and a new standard of living. It is the number one equalizer, because something that can't be taken away from you is your education. So when I talk to people about Project Rebound, it comes straight from the heart. I've been through the program. I was a student in Project Rebound. I was a student assistant, a graduate student assistant, an outreach coordinator at California State University Bakersfield, and now the director here. So it's like when I tell somebody about it, it's something that has helped hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of students to realize a different path in life. This is the open door to society and reentry. People will accept you, even if you have a bad past, once they find out that you've changed your situation and how hard you had to work to get where you're at. You know, going from no education, no sixth grade education, to a master's degree in psychology with a 4.0 is an amazing feat. And I'm not the only one. There's, you know, hundreds of us.
And the track record is impressive. According to the Cal State University system, the retention rate for students who are part of Project Rebound is higher than students who are not. What does that mean to you?
That the program is working. We have, first and foremost, we dedicate ourselves to whatever we do. Normally, individuals who commit crimes fall under this process of the strain theory, right? You're going to do whatever it takes to get what normal society has, unfortunately, through unconventional methods. And a lot of our people have put a lot of time and effort into committing their crimes. And then they see that there's a different thing. They don't want to go back to prison. So they put that much energy back into education. We have a program that assists individuals. We're there. It's an each one, teach one policy. Our cohorts are extremely strong. We maintain contact to make sure that, you know, our retention is high, as well as the GPAs of our students, just their drive to be educated once they get that taste of education.
Get bit by the bug.
Right. When you get an A in your first class or you get a B in your first class when you've never had education, it's a game changer. It's like, oh, wait, I can do this. You know, not that we don't fall, pray to the, you know, do I belong here thought processes, but we know that we're good at what we do. It's that extra work.
Yeah, and also looking at the Cal State website when they were talking about recidivism and reoffending, it's at zero for students that are at Project Rebound, correct?
Yes. It's negligible is what I would say. It's like so low you can't even see it. You know, there might be one, and it's usually something that has to do with a technical violation. No new crimes. Most of our students don't commit new crimes at all. It does, you know, they say that it's at a 0% recidivism. When you look at, you know, this area, of course, the Central Valley has approximately 76% recidivism. The state of California is 46%. The United States in whole is 66%. And we don't have any of our students. I've known of none so far that have went back to prison.
Desiree, I want to turn to you because you're now part of the program. How did you become familiar with Project Rebound?
Thank you. Yes. First off, I got started at Project Rebound through a recommendation through another Project Rebounder. Of course, I won't name him by name. He knows who he is, and he's probably going to be listening to this because it is an each one, teach one policy. When I stepped into the office, I really didn't know what I was looking for. I actually met the person through another fellowship, which also works with institutions in and outside of the prison system. And he made a recommendation. He said it would be great for me. So I walked in, and this was just before Aaron got here. So this was our prior director, Andrew Wynn. And I met the first student assistant, Mr. Corey, and I just felt so welcomed right from the jump. And Project Rebound truly cares about their students. From the time I walked in and met Andrew Nguyen, I expressed my enthusiasm. I told him about my background, and he immediately saw that I was passionate and driven to succeed, and asked me if I needed a job.
Yeah. I mean, inclusion and acceptance is invaluable and so profound, and we don't always get it in our lives. I would imagine that was just so instrumental in you sticking with it.
Definitely. First off, when you get to Sacramento State, I'm born and raised in Sacramento. I think it's funny and something that is somewhat surreal to be sitting here right now talking about this, because there was a time in my life through poor choices and, you know, self-doubt and whatever else comes along with these types of poor choices, that Sacramento State was just a dream that I thought would never come true. And through the assistance of Project Rebound, Nehemiah, our outreach coordinator, Gunnar Johnson, the other outreach coordinator, and Aaron Green, now here, I'm actually going to be stepping into applying for graduate programs, and that's just a dream I never even thought could happen for me. So Project Rebound is truly transformational.
What are you going to be studying?
I have three different ones that I'm looking to attain. Criminal justice, of course, psychology, and or in my field of communications.
That's wonderful.
Thank you.
You know, when listening to Aaron, you know, and him talking about how, you know, he didn't realize education was a possibility, you know, at such a young age, at such a formative age. Was that the same for you? What was your journey and your relationship with education?
Yes. Well, my journey was a little bit different. Being born and raised here in Sacramento, you know, I am a biracial woman. My father is African-American and my mother is Caucasian, mixed with a couple of things in between. But so he was a hardworking military man. Education was always pushed upon us. And I have a sibling who we just went in opposite directions. And so I was always really in love with education. And I went through my formative years, and unfortunately, some things happened. My parents decided to part ways at a pivotal time in my life, and I was 12 years old. And at that time, I didn't have any other guidance or anybody really pointing me in a direction that I felt I could take that information and use it. I was in a very vulnerable state, and it was at that time I started making the worst of my decisions. And eventually, I, of course, finished high school. I actually finished high school early. I graduated at 15. I skipped up. I was an overachiever. And without the tools to be a functional person through a dysfunctional society, I continued to make errors. And those errors ended up landing me into a jail. And but I overcame that, and I didn't actually go back to school until 2017. After life happened, you know, I got a job in a private sector, worked, you know, without my college education, and realized that I was being underpaid. I was never going to make as much as my educated peers, and I was never going to break the socioeconomic barrier without a degree. And so when I decided to go back, I had originally just wanted a certification. And again, I didn't come into Project Rebound until I transferred to Sacramento State, which was disappointing, because if I would have known that there was a subsidiary of any kind, I would have definitely been on board. But I didn't learn that information until I got here, you know. And so now that I'm here and I transferred in, my passion for academia was unlocked after my first class. After I got 100% in my class, and I realized that I knew so little, and I dedicated myself to learning as much as possible.
Given that you had already transferred to Sac State and then you were connected with Project Rebound, in terms of support and resources, what did Project Rebound offer you that if you still didn't know it existed, but you were still a student at Sac State, would be lacking?
Oh, my goodness. Well, number one, as a student, transferring in, the process in itself is very jarring, you know, the application process and, you know, you get the checklists and, you know, I'm also a parent, I have children. And so, you know, everybody has lives. As I transferred in, I saw just a streamlined focus. Your thought process isn't really on organizations and whatnot until you get closer to knowing that you will be here. I was fortunate to have a very, very beautiful person guiding me at Folsom Lake College, my student counselor, and she still works there. And she encouraged me to get involved with the Black Student Union here at Sac State. She graduated from Sac State, and she also encouraged me to reach out to the Martin Luther King Junior Center. And so those were the original two that I had thought of, just, you know, off of the reference. But it just so happened Project Rebound was on the same floor, and I felt I was being guided in that direction. So once I got there, I was offered vouchers that I didn't know about, resources to use on campus for food. The CARES department is phenomenal. ASI Children's Center was one of the areas that, yes, it's in the planner, but until you get involved, you don't realize how deeply ASI is involved with helping other students. And so once I started picking up pieces of information along the way through the CARES department, through, you know, meeting different people that Aaron and Nehemiah had introduced me to, I was fortunate enough to learn some of the processes. And I can definitely say, as a student, we could have more access to the resources that could help with housing, especially food, the pantry. These are things a lot of students just don't know about, because we have so many other things that we have to do just to get ready to be here.
It can be overwhelming.
Definitely.
Yeah, for any student. I think a lot of people can relate to that. You're listening to a special Best of Insight 2022 edition here on CAP Radio. If you're just joining us, we're revisiting my conversation with Aaron Green and Desiree McFarland about Project Rebound, a program offered at Cal State campuses, including Sac State, for those incarcerated or previously incarcerated that allows them to achieve their higher education goals. You're listening to Insight on your NPR station, CAP Radio. I'm Vicki Gonzalez. We'll continue this conversation in just a minute.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to a special Best of Insight 2022 edition here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicki Gonzalez. If you're just joining us, we're continuing my conversation about Project Rebound, a program that supports reintegration for those formerly and currently incarcerated wishing to enroll at the California State University, including Sac State. Back in September, I spoke with Aaron Green, a former student and now director of Project Rebound at Sac State, as well as Desiree McFarland, a student participating in the program. So, Aaron, who is eligible?
Eligibility is individuals who are justice impacted. So we do deal with anybody who has any kind of arrest records or jail time, juvenile justice involved individuals, and, of course, individuals who did time in penitentiaries, both federally and state. So it just is individuals who have justice, you know, involvement.
And at Sac State, I mean, they coordinate and partner with Folsom State Prison and Mule Creek State Prison. And the classes are not only virtual, they're also in person as well.
Yeah. So the TOPS program is another program that we have here on campus that Project Rebound is partnered with. And they do offer the two bachelor's programs inside of Mule Creek and Folsom State Prison. We also do outreach at almost every other prison in the Central Valley and this area, all the way up to High Desert State Prison. So we get that piece, but the main portion of like our educational piece here is the Mule Creek and Folsom State Prison.
I want to get to the origin story of Project Rebound. Who is credited for creating this?
So Dr. John Irwin in 1967 started Project Rebound. He was convicted and did 5 years in prison for a gas station robbery. And he was the one, when he got out, he decided he wanted to go back to school and get an education. Dr. Irwin is a world-renowned author. He wrote one of the books called The Felon. He has multiple books. He started off in 1967 at San Francisco State University with Project Rebound, but he had received his doctorate in sociology. As soon as he started it out, it was started in the little broom closet at San Francisco State University. They gave him paper, pen, a chair, and a desk, and he began written correspondence with individuals who were incarcerated.
And there's now a John Irwin House, which is at Cal State Fullerton, and that's the first housing community for formerly incarcerated university students in the country, not just in California. And now Sacramento State is hoping to do something similar, which would be the first of its kind in Northern California. What's happening with that? Where does it stand now?
Yesterday, we had a meeting at 4 o'clock talking about the purchase of the home. We did get $1.1 million in total for the purchase. We've decided we will purchase a home that's approximately $900,000. We're going to go look at properties very soon. I'm hoping to find a house that has at least two dwellings on it so that we can assist male and female students, because we do have the need for housing for both male and females. It's really difficult, unfortunately, right now to find housing for cheap. The market has went crazy.
That's an understatement.
Yeah. So it's like finding, you know, 2 4-bedroom, 3 bathrooms 2 years ago for $400,000 would have been easy. Now you're looking at one the same size for double the price. So it's, you know, finding that. But we are in the makings of it. We're just waiting for the funds to hit.
How many people do you hope to offer housing to?
If we only get one house, it'll probably be 8 to 10 students. Right now, we have about 25% of our student population on campus that is either couch surfing or housing insecure, and that's in our program, and we have 70 students. So we need more bed spaces than we have money to purchase. Hopefully, we'll figure it out.
Yeah, so you have 70 students currently in Project Rebound at Sac State?
And that's just at Sac State's Project Rebound. We don't count the individuals who are matriculated students at the Mule Creek and Folsom State Prison. They are the top students. We do provide them with support. We help them with their transcripts and transcript evaluation, academic advising. We do a lot of, you know, things with the TOPS program. We just don't count them in our numbers. Because TOPS needs to have their own number set aside. We will assist them, and as soon as they get out of prison, they will be able to come into the Project Rebound. We help them to establish their account, walk them through their process. We have several that come out, you know, a semester or a year, I should say. So throughout an academic year, we'll get at least one or two of our top students coming out and becoming Project Rebound students. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, they don't have housing. And that's kind of a trick thing. The reason that we want the house and need the house is because of the convicting county rule. So if you go to prison, you have to return to your convicting county. And if there are Sacramento State students, fully matriculated students taking classes, working on a bachelor's program, and they don't have housing here in Sacramento or a place to go, they'll be sent back to their convicting county. And how can they do classes in person at Sacramento State when they're in Los Angeles? Yeah. So that's something that we've had to deal with.
Yeah. Yeah, there are definitely complexities with that. You know, Desiree, I mean, you were talking about the challenges and housing. You mentioned that. And I mean, just underscoring that, can you just kind of walk us through the challenges of finding housing as a student and also part of Project Rebound?
Definitely. I have the unique experience of several 10-plus years in property management prior to my return to academia. So not only do I understand what Aaron is speaking of as far as the rental prices go, when I was actually in the business, a three-bedroom was on average $900. The same three-bedroom that hasn't been rebuilt or anything spectacular new, same shell, $2,300. It's absurd. And unfortunately, the pay in which they are expecting people to be able to afford these things are just not given to students right off the jump. And so having the ability, and then on top of that, people that have a prior criminal record generally don't have the best credit to go along with it, because these negative consequences, I can tell you, I wasn't keeping up on all my bills when I was making these really horrific decisions. And so it just kind of domino effect. And so unfortunately, negative rental history can affect your credit score for up to 10 years, depending on what it is. And that coupled with your criminal past can be a depletion of opportunities. And so what we do here at Project Rebound is create pockets of opportunities for our students. I can, as a student assistant, a very proud, grateful student assistant, anybody that comes to our office, or even when we're tabling next to the quad right now in front of the library, I let them know about College Town. You know, that's a resource just for Sac State students. Get your name on the list. Be proactive. Because that is the best place going for to save gas, to save, you know, time. And there's no other place in town that is that close. And then once we have, you know, Hornet housing and things like that coming available, although it is available, Project Rebound students generally tend to not know that it's there, because, again, the focus is primarily just getting your footing here. And a four-year university is a lot different than a JC in so many different ways. And just the intimidation of coming to something so large can be overwhelming as a student when you're looking to just get your books and get involved. It's nice to know that Project Rebound is there to give housing information, but we don't have the funds to make it official for them in a lot of ways. So for myself, personally, as a mother of three, I live in Citrus Heights. Beautiful, expensive. But it wasn't until I got to Sacramento State and I had to go through my JC years from 2017 till, you know, 2021 when I transferred in without any housing assistance at all. Unfortunately, I ended up having to go to parishes to ask for help. Saying, you know, any of the parishes downtown that work with, you know, just helping in any financial regard, especially through the summer, because your financial aid packet doesn't cover all year. And as a parent, it barely covers, you know, basics. And so you have to get really, really creative or you will be homeless. And unfortunately, as a mother, you just don't have that opportunity. So you're looking anywhere. It is a godsend that I was able to come to Sacramento State and be involved directly with Project Rebound to utilize my knowledge about property management and the economy to help facilitate the services here at the university for the students.
Yeah, you're talking about a university that's over 30,000 students. That's larger than some cities in the state. I'm curious, have either of you received, or even just the program in and of itself, received any pushback, or have you been on the receiving end of stigma?
Yeah, there is, you know, there is pushback. There's questions about how do we build a house for individuals? What individuals we're going to allow into the housing? Do we have to worry about zoning regulations and who can live in the house? And there's all kinds of things that go along with it, and the fear that someone isn't going to be happy that formerly incarcerated people are going to be living next to them. That's a huge issue. HOAs, you know, homeowners associations, usually have really strict rules about how many cars you're able to have, how many people you have. So there's a lot of different things. Senate Bill 2 does discuss like transitional housing and how it has to be looked at as regular rental or regular, you know, residential property. So that's a really big issue. There's always the pushback from landlords. We hear it all the time on a constant basis from our students that rental applications include a little box that say, have you ever been convicted of a felony? The minute that you have that on a rental application for an apartment or a house, it's an exclusionary tactic. If you have 100 people that come in and apply, and 10 of those individuals have that box marked, yes, they've been convicted of a felony, you just pick them applications up and throw them in the trash. They don't want to rent to individuals. I've experienced it. I've had my application withdrawn from housing. And then, of course, it isn't just the fact that you have an individual asking the question. I've already paid my debt to society when I went to prison. I got out. I've changed my life. 6 years later, you're still asking me the same question. 7 years later, 8 years later. And it's not going to let me get into your housing. You don't want to rent to me because of a crime that I committed.
I couldn't agree more with Aaron's statement on that. And not only have, unfortunately, in the business, he's right. The minute that someone checkmarks that box, it's not legally, management companies can't say that they are
discriminating, right.
But they can politely put it to the bottom of the pile and just take your $35 or $50 now for your application fees and act like you never existed. And so it's unfortunate and really, really unfair, but that is also a discriminatory tactic, and it is against the law to do that. And so I'm also grateful at Project Rebound that we have other programs and other people with knowledge that can facilitate students that are just as impacted to be able to navigate through these types of things, because it is, I actually just talked to someone yesterday who said she had 5 applications that she was rejected for immediately. I said, stop telling them that this is part of what you're going through. Just put the information as basic as possible. And since, you know, somebody will be a payee, you deal with it later and see what happens. And, you know, we'll see if that information works out. But it's just one of the scenarios where people get discriminated against for something that they've rebuilt their lives on. I'm not the same person I was when I was 19. You know, I didn't make the same mistakes, and I continue to move forward. But the stigma is just like any other stigma, based on people not understanding and unwilling to see something positive. So,
finally, I want to ask the both of you, because the opportunities are obviously there, but there are still barriers, as we just laid out. And there are people listening to this where this really resonates with them. What do you want to say to them that you wish you heard when you didn't know that Project Rebound was possible?
I would have to say the one thing that I could personally say is never give up hope. All right. There is programs, there are services, there are ways that you can actually achieve whatever you set your mind to achieving. And if, you know, like individuals in our class, like, you know, individuals who are coming out of prison and have these negative situations, or who have been just justice impacted, they don't think that there's a way. They don't feel the hope. There is. We work with Root and Rebound, which helps individuals to expunge their records. They're helping with the whole issue about employment applications and ban the box. They're helping our students out with, you know, housing discrimination situations where they are applying and getting denied because of their, you know, past incarceration rates. So there's nothing that stands in your way except for your self-doubt. So you have to remove that self-doubt and move in that positive direction.
Definitely. I can safely say that as a Project Rebound student, my life has transformed. Even it's been a year since I transferred in. It'll be a year tomorrow, actually. And it's changed my life forever. I not only have made strong connections in my peer group with like-minded individuals, but it has unlocked other passions. I had originally tabled some of my other passions because I just didn't think I would be able to get my record clear to even apply. And so now that I have the opportunities through Root and Rebound, I want to tell other students, don't hold back. Don't let fear ever stop you, because all you got to do is show up. So I'm grateful that I have this opportunity, and I continue to look for all the amazing opportunities that Sacramento State offers for their students.
Desiree and Aaron, thank you so much for the conversation.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
That's Aaron Green, the director of Project Rebound at Sacramento State, and Desiree McFarland, a student participating in the program for those incarcerated or previously incarcerated to allow them to achieve higher education goals and avoid reoffending. Project Rebound is offered across 14 Cal State campuses. Our conversation first aired back in September. Still ahead, a retired Stockton professor wrote a book about renowned American jazz pianist and composer Dave Brubeck, telling the social justice backstory of The Real Ambassadors, starring Louis Armstrong, which premiered 60 years ago this year. You're listening to Insight here on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're back in just a moment.
Hi there. If you're enjoying Insight, we think you'll love our podcast, Blue Dot, with your host, that's me, Dave Shlohm. Every week, we take a deep dive into science and nature, from the search for life beyond our pale blue dot in the vastness of space to the ecosystems we all depend on. You never know what you'll hear, from the physics of Leonardo da Vinci to communications with humpback whales. Check out Blue Dot wherever you get your podcasts.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Insight on CAP Radio. I'm your host, Vicky Gonzalez. We're taking a listen back to some of the best conversations of 2022. And that brings me to Dave Brubeck. He's a famous American jazz pianist and composer. But did you also know he is much more than a jazz icon? He's also composed classical music, choral works, and a ballet. He even wrote a Broadway-style musical in collaboration with his wife, Lola. That musical, The Real Ambassador, starring Louis Armstrong, is the subject of a book released this year by retired University of the Pacific professor Keith Hatzchek. It tells the social justice backstory of the Brubeck's magnum opus, which premiered at the Monterey Jazz Festival 60 years ago. CAP Radio jazz host Avery Jeffrey shared their conversation back in September.
The title The Real Ambassadors is an ironic reference to the U.S. State Department program that sent jazz musicians around the world as cultural ambassadors. With music by Dave and words by Iola Brubeck, the musical exposes the hypocrisy of the U.S. government, which was using jazz musicians to promote democracy and freedom abroad while maintaining policies of racial inequality at home.
Who's the real ambassador? Certain facts we can't ignore. In my humble way, I'm the USA. Though I represent the government don't represent some policies I'm for. Oh, we learn to be concerned about the constitutionality. In our nation, segregation isn't a legality. Soon our only differences will be in personality. That's what I stand for. Real ambassador, yes, the real ambassador.
In his humble way, he's the USA.
This studio recording of The Real Ambassadors featuring Louis Armstrong was made just before the musical premiered at the 1962 Monterey Jazz Festival. We're lucky to have it because The Real Ambassadors was only performed once with its original cast, and the performance wasn't captured on tape. By all accounts, that September night in Monterey was magical and meaningful.
When Armstrong came on stage that night, he was dressed up as an ambassador with a top hat and a tuxedo, and he walked to center stage and beamed at the audience. There was a standing ovation after a huge roar came out from the crowd to see Armstrong on stage playing a role, a dramatic role, that directly matched his own strong feelings about Jim Crow, and how segregation was a blight on America.
Keith Hatzchek has authored several books on the music industry and was the director of the Music Management Program at the University of the Pacific for 20 years. Until recently, UOP housed the Brubeck Collection, a massive archive detailing the careers of Pacific alums Dave and Iola Brubeck. When Hatzchek discovered materials related to the Real Ambassadors in the archives, he was surprised.
I knew most of Dave Brubeck's albums, and I thought, he never did a Broadway musical. What was this? So as I dug deeper and deeper in the Brubeck collection, I found three or four big file folders just full of correspondence and clippings. And then in another part of the collection, sheet music scores, song sketches, lyric sheets. And I realized this was a huge project between 1957 and 1962 that Dave and his wife, Iola Brubeck, really invested a lot of time and a lot of heart into.
Hatschek says the reason The Real Ambassadors was so important to the Brubecks was because it wasn't just a musical, it was a statement. They wanted to expose the racist ways that were ingrained in America and sanctioned by the government.
Dave and Iola decided to use their voice at that time, as Dave's star was really ascending, to call out segregation and to argue that it was pretty absurd to determine on someone's skin color how smart or successful or talented they might be. But that was the way America worked. And Dave led an integrated band, and there were hundreds of nights they played when they had trouble getting a hotel room after their gig because Eugene Wright, their wonderful bassist, was African American.
One experience that put the issues of segregation and government hypocrisy into stark relief for Brubeck was his involvement in a cultural exchange program hosted by the U.S. State Department. Louis Armstrong also took part in the program, which is what gave Dave and Iola the idea for creating The Real Ambassadors in the late 1950s.
American jazz musicians were touring all over the world on behalf of Uncle Sam and winning the hearts and minds, you might say, of people from India to Pakistan. Well, when these musicians got home, many of whom were African Americans, the minute they got off the airplane, it was back to, here's your water fountain, here's your hotel room, and you can only get food through the back of the restaurant. So that irony was not lost on Dave and Iola Brubeck. And when Dave pitched the concept for the musical to Lewis, he flipped. He said, this is just what I wanted to say artistically. These are the thoughts I've had that segregation is ridiculous. And I'd love to play the lead role in your musical, Dave.
The State Department has discovered jazz. It reaches folks like nothing ever has. Like when they feel that jazzy rhythm, they know we're really with them. That's what we call cultural exchange.
Despite Armstrong's enthusiasm, the Brubeck's Dream Project faced some major challenges, not the least of which was the popularity of its star performers.
Brubeck was on top of the world, leading the top small jazz combo, touring America, Europe, all over, and he was booked months in advance. Armstrong, of course, was booked for movies, television, film appearances, tours up to 2 years in advance. So the economics of actually staging the musical as a musical with costumes and dancers and a chorus didn't really make any sense. Their careers would have all had to been put on hold.
When Broadway didn't work out, they tried for London and Washington, D.C., but to no avail. Ultimately, The Real Ambassadors, starring Louis Armstrong, Dave Brubeck, Carmen McRae, and Lambert Hendrickson-Bavon, found a home in Dave's native California as a one-off at the Monterey Jazz Festival in 1962.
The co-founders of that festival, Jimmy Lyons, a jazz DJ, and Ralph J. Gleason, who was a jazz journalist, wanted to premiere new jazz music that had been created just for the Monterey Jazz Festival every year. So premiering a musical, even in a concert version, fit right in with what their raison d'etre was for the festival. And Jimmy Lyons had to finesse the booking agents to get all of the talent, because we're not only talking about Louis Armstrong, we're talking about Carmen McRae, Lambert Hendrickson-Bavon, Dave Brubeck's band, minus Paul Desmond, who didn't want to participate, and Louis's six-piece band. So Jimmy had the wherewithal to get all those artists booked for their own sets, and then he added a sentence in the end of each booking agreement, plus play 1 hour on Sunday night between 9 and midnight. And he did not specify what that 1 hour would be. Well, it was, in fact, The Real Ambassadors. And when it premiered that night, Avery, that crowd couldn't really believe what they were hearing and seeing. Here was Louis Armstrong and his band playing with Dave Brubeck, who on paper, they played completely different styles of jazz music. And Brubeck with lyrics and music, what? But the audience fell right in from the first beat of the first song, Everybody's Coming. And when Armstrong came on stage that night, Dave recalled, it sounded like an explosion.
Everybody's coming.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody's coming.
Yeah, yeah.
Everybody's coming here. Louis Armstrong will appear. Promise, promise.
Like most any musical, The Real Ambassadors features a mix of up-tempo numbers and love songs as it delivers its rebuke of segregation. While the message alone proved to be apropos to the moment when the civil rights struggle in America was nearing its apex, the music and Armstrong's poignant performance stirred emotions in the audience and praise from the critics.
God created man in his image and likeness.
They say I look like God.
In the image of God created he man.
Could God be black? My God,
in the image of God created he
them. If all the made in the image of thee,
male and female created he them.
Could thou perchance a zebra be?
In the image and likeness of God,
can it be?
The Monterey premiere was truly a night to remember, but the musical might well have been forgotten if Columbia hadn't reissued the studio recording of The Real Ambassadors on CD. Hatschek says it brought Brubeck and Armstrong's message to a whole new audience.
This became sort of a footnote in both of their careers until, as you said, in 1994, Columbia reissued the CD, and a lot of younger musicians picked up on it and went, "What's this? Hey, this is pretty cool."
Three of those younger musicians, vocalist Liz Wright, trumpeter Roy Hargrove, and bassist Christian McBride, joined Dave Brubeck on stage at the 2002 Monterey Jazz Festival to celebrate the 40th anniversary of The Real Ambassadors. Still, the show never made it to Broadway as the Brubecks had first dreamed.
In 2002, they did three or four songs from it at the Monterey Jazz Festival. Got a very, very warm response. But again, it never really got out to the broader public, which I think was a disappointment to them because they saw Armstrong as the most eloquent spokesperson for equal rights. And my last in-person interview in 2009, they were both very clear that for them, The Real Ambassadors just fueled them to want to do even more and produce more new works and more different approaches musically to talk about social justice issues.
As we approach the 60th anniversary of the musical's premiere at Monterey, Keith Hatschek says it's important to remember that advocating for what's right is just as important today as it was in 1962. And doing so doesn't require star power.
Every one of us has agency. And although at the time Dave Brubeck and Louis Armstrong were world-renowned performers, they would have tackled a project like this even if they were just local heroes because it was in their DNA. They wanted to use their artistic voices to speak out. My challenge to people is that it doesn't have to be racial issues. It could be the environment. It could be healthcare. It could be how our society values elderly folks. Whatever your thing is, be a champion for that.
For Insight, I'm Avery Jeffrey.
Remember who you are and what you represent. Always be a credit to your government. No matter what you say or what you do, the eyes of the world are watching you. Remember who you are and what you represent. Represent, represent, represent.
Represent.
remember who you are and what you represent. Jelly rolling bases helps us to invent a weapon that no other nation has, especially the Russians can't claim jazz. Remember who you are and what you represent. Represent, 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 represent.
And that is it for Insight today. You can learn more about our guests at capradio.org/insight. You can also subscribe to the Insight podcast. And I'm Vicky Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.